CSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith, and Sebastian would be here if he was able to talk. Our longtime co-host has lost his voice after struggling with a little bit of a headache recently as well. So that is a little unfortunate. We're obviously wishing him the speediest recovery. And hopefully he will be able to join us next week. Now, for some of our listeners, you may be aware that we are only a little bit obsessed with Eurovision. And no spoilers, we have not yet seen it. Myself and Sebastian are meeting up this weekend with and having a bit of a delayed Eurovision party. So if you wanted to get all of the details on what is the most viewed Eurovision in the competition's history, we'll be giving that and all of the details in next week's show. Coming up a little later, I will be playing one track from the Swiss entry that didn't do so well, but what we know is that there are a lot of songs that come out that, when performed, as I'm sure you all know, sometimes the performance of a song and the recording of a song hit different. And this particular track by the Swiss entry just sounds great, and I think has an excellent message, so we will be keeping an eye out on that. But we do have at least one interview lined up today. We discuss with the curator and one of the artists behind Fractured Bodies, an exhibit being held at the Glad Day Bookstore. Glad Day Bookstore being an historic location within within downtown Toronto in the Gay Village, and we are excited to have a conversation about that. But first of all, we've discovered some good news, and I do try to share good news if and when we find it. I'm going to start it off with some really interesting news. We are waiting to see from the Toronto Pride and the other prides, the big major prides across Canada, as to who they are making their grand marshals. But we were pleasantly surprised to see that the Los Angeles Pride have announced their grand marshals. Now, I don't know if any of you are planning to go to LA, but they have made posthumously Leslie Jordan, the late Leslie Jordan, one of their grand marshals, along with Margaret Cho, who is still with us, thankfully, and the ACLU are also their grand marshals. So between the three of them, that's pretty exciting news. Like I said, we're going to be keeping an eye out as we start to gear towards what is really Pride season. I'm sure that folks know that Pride happens at different times depending on where you are. In Canada, there's a bit of a polite agreement between the major cities that they tend not to hold their Pride celebrations on the same weekend as each other, offering people in their community an opportunity to be able to celebrate without having to choose between Montreal or Toronto or Ottawa or Vancouver. I suspect that one's maybe not the most difficult choice, but the big Pride festivals across the country do tend to land at different times, and obviously they all generally avoid Canada Day and the big other times in the schedule. But what is surely to be an immensely entertaining, hopefully very sunny, very celebratory, very rainbow occasions across the country, we will be keeping an eye out. I'm sorry about that. My arm hit the space bar and restarted our theme tune. So I've got to be careful where I put my arm. This is live radio. I am in the studio accidentally turning things on as we speak, so I'll be a little bit more careful moving forward. We talked before about how the Canadian blood services, or Canada Blood Services and Hemo-Quebec, came to an agreement where they are now accepting blood donations, and have done for quite a few months now, from men that have sex with men. And they're testing and they're asking questions based on risk and behaviours that are happening. So instead of a blanket ban across all gay men, it is now based on what is your actual risk to the blood supply. And I bring this up because the Food and Drug Administration in the United States has also been lifting their restrictions, with new rules taking effect on the 11th of May. So this just passed Thursday, essentially meaning that it's yet again, that's another behavior-based approach to it as well. In other U.S. news, we saw that the Supreme Court, they make a lot of decisions in the Supreme Court. Some of them are big, massive decisions, and some of them are just procedural. But there was an interesting decision that raised a lot of eyebrows at the U.S. Supreme Court, and it's about Estrella Santos Zakaria. Now, she's a Guatemalan trans woman who is fighting against deportation, claiming that she would face persecution in Guatemala if she was deported. Now, what was really interesting in this decision is that the justices, Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, as well as the conservative justice Samuel Alito, both used her preferred name, both used her preferred pronoun. They did not dead name the lady in the case, and it stands in stark contrast to a large number of stories in the United States which are very, very anti-trans, including a range of new legislation. Just to give you a feeling of what I'm referring to here, Kelly Croft, who is running for the Kentucky governorship and the Republican nomination for that role, has recently said in a town hall, and I quote, "We will not have transgenders in our school system." How she plans to remove trans people from schools, bearing in mind that this would be children, was not phrased out. But it is certainly concerning that there is a huge anti-trans push. So when institutions like the Supreme Court argue cases on their merits, use preferred pronouns, use the gender markers that have been indicated, it speaks absolute volumes to everybody involved. Now, earlier I'd mentioned that there was a Eurovision, I'm pretty sure it was a Eurovision song that I really liked. I think the reason why I bring this up is very often these things, I mean, first of all, Eurovision songs are sometimes utterly ridiculous. But it is also very much a political venue, and there's very often at least a couple of songs that come up. This one, called Water Gun by Remo Ferrer, was a great track, a great submission from Switzerland, and I think really speaks to a bit of an anti-war sentiment that is rising in the US, in Europe in particular, especially following the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. So this was their entry. I don't think it did particularly well, but I think it might be one of those tracks that sort of hang on in our sort of collective memory as we move forward. And after that, we will be jumping to Laughing by the Don River. So an openly gay-identified musician based in Toronto, with the moniker, obviously, folks, you are familiar with the Don Valley River. And we will be listening to Laughing, which is the new track from Don River, following the Water Gun by Remo Ferrer. And after that, we will be jumping into the interview I did earlier on in the week with the team behind Fractured Bodies. And we will be back just after this. Hello and welcome back to the Home of Canada's Media. This is one of the interviews we mentioned at the top of the Oh, we'll try that again. It seems like we have gone to the wrong room. Let me fix that again. And here we go. Like I said, we'll be back just after this.
Dog, the fur on her face has gone white as a ghost. She's 14 years old. Her tail, it will fold, and her nose will run dry as she's letting you know she's ready to go. A transcontinental liner servicing the craters of Mars. The engines run hot. The conductor is drunk on ambition she found in the bars. Yeah.
And welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. This is one of the interviews that we mentioned at the top of the hour as we introduced today's show. Coming up a little later, I believe, we are going to be talking about Pride at Work and their other things. But until now, we are touching on an exhibit that is coming to the incredibly pivotal and historical Glad Day bookstore. And I am thrilled to be joined by Jem Nasrallah, who is one of the artists and one of the curators behind the exhibit, as well as another one of the artists, Lynn Nguyen. Thank you so much for joining me today as we discuss fractured bodies.
Great.
Fragmented body. Fragmented body. Yes. That's absolutely true.
Thank you.
Excellent. Actually, I did an interview two weeks ago with the great team behind the documentary A Happy Man, and I spent the first 5 minutes referring to it as a handsome man. So this is very much in keeping with the Freudian slips that tend to happen a lot. So yeah, let's start off with what is this exhibit, Fragmented Body, at the Glad Day Bookstore in downtown Toronto. So for folks who live in the city, in the GTA, or are visiting Toronto from May 18th through to June 7th, what can they expect to see of this exhibit in that space?
Sure. The exhibition is part of the Contact Photography Festival's open call programming. So it's all photo-based artwork. It's not very traditional artwork, though. We all work in analog, and we work in alternative or historical processes as well. So you'll see, for example, some cyanotype in the show. Actually, a lot of us really love cyanotype, so you'll see quite a bit of it. And the exhibition itself was born from several of us in the exhibition attend SPOW, and I just realized that a lot of our themes that we were speaking about through our artwork were very similar. And a lot of it had to do with kind of reclaiming your body and reclaiming your relationship with your body. So that's really where the exhibition started. And that's what we try to kind of parse out in this exhibition is, you know, we're not all at the best relationship with our bodies, but this is what we're working towards, especially after, you know, many of us have had childhoods, if we've dealt with abuse or if we've dealt with assault or, you know, other kinds of trauma, it's very difficult to have a healthy relationship with your body. So that's really what this exhibition is about.
It's certainly because I've had the pleasure of seeing some of the pieces in advance. I think they were on your website, and as a collection, it really does give pause. And I think it does encourage people to think. I mean, I think as a collection, it's certainly, at least to me, as you know, Joe Schmo off the street, I think it becomes evident that that title of fragmented or fragmentation and that disconnect is certainly evident in the pieces and the collection as a whole. You mentioned in the bio for the exhibit that it's about the artist's relationship to their body. So did you, let me add, is seven of you, seven artists?
Yes.
Yes.
So did all of you independently have to sit and think, okay, how do I visualize my body and my relationship with my body? And then, you know, maybe we can dive in on specifically each of you who are on the call here as to how you approached that specific question. So
my kind of, it'll sound a little bit corny, but my kind of journey towards, you know, loving my body has been a very long and arduous process, which really began with unlearning a lot of misogyny, internalized misogyny, as well as eventually realizing that I'm non-binary, which was a lifelong journey. So I kind of went into SPOW wanting to, which, sorry, is the School of Photographic Arts in Ottawa. I'm going to say SPOW a lot. So that's the school we attended. I went into SPOW knowing that I really wanted to explore my relationship with my body, especially since as a fat person and as a queer person and as a trans person, my body isn't really something that I'm seeing all over the place. Especially in Ottawa, it's a very small arts community in a lot of ways. So I just knew right away that that's something that I really wanted to explore in my artwork. And since it's been ongoing for 2 years, I thought this would be, you know, the perfect topic for, it's my first exhibition out of school. So for me, it just worked out that that was exactly what I wanted to be doing.
What about yourself, Lynn, when you were presented with that core theme and that ask for how do you explore your relationship to your body in a very public way? I mean, it's up on the wall. You know, how did you approach that?
So similar to Jem, I've been exploring that for a while now, and not only through photography but through dance. So before I started my photographic practice, I did a lot of dance, and that really helped me reconnect with my body after sexual assault. And just the practice of dance and the repetition, the connection to music, the attention to detail, the way that I had to sit in stillness with my body and really pay attention to the different parts of my body. That's where it first started in an arts practice. And I've been exploring other ways of showing that through photographs before this exhibition, through some of my still life works with flowers. So for me, this has been an ongoing conversation, and I've been really inspired by Jem and the other artists in the show because they push photographic medium in so many different ways. Like, yes, we mentioned cyanotype, but Liliana's doing dry plate historical process, and Tyler is doing a lot of long exposure movement and capturing the movement in one long shot. So from seeing their work, I did some experimentation of my own for this exhibition, and I'm so glad that everything's coming together for this exhibition.
One of the in the description for this exhibition, you mentioned the intent to create moments of empathy and connection between the person viewing the artwork and the artist themselves, because of course a lot of these photos seem to be self-portraiture. And my instinct is that I think you've done that. I think as a group collectively, you've certainly, as I mentioned earlier, you give pause. You know, looking at that artwork, it makes me think of this morning I was getting dressed and there's a massive full length mirror. And, you know, I generally avoid it until I am like fully in my outfit. Like, you know, right. But I think that so many of us, across our listening audience, have these moments where body confidence and connection to our body just isn't where it needs to be. And it isn't exclusive to folks who maybe are carrying a bit of extra weight, myself included, but also, you know, in the gay community, we obviously have disproportionate rates of anorexia and also bigorexia, people who are excessively, you know, up the other end of the scale. So I think that there is something incredibly human here about this exhibit. Is that humanity and that sort of universal moment of pause something that you were trying to achieve with this exhibit?
Yes, and thank you for saying that. That's definitely in order to create kind of this empathy between you know, us artists and the viewers, or the viewers and themselves, or, you know, the viewers and the person next to them. I think the number one thing is showing that humanity, kind of, you know, putting a face to something that maybe someone has not put a face to before, and then it just was not that important to them. But yeah, showing the humanity is really what I'm going for. And I think the representation doesn't hurt either. Being able to see someone who maybe looks a little bit like you up on a wall is important. You know, my images are, I'm still not where I want to be in terms of the relationship with my body. And, you know, I'm sitting with those images, so I can tell that, but I don't know that everyone else knows exactly, you know, what my issues are. And so they're able to maybe project their own or make of it what they will. Yeah, it really is showing that shared humanity between us.
Yeah, I think as artists, all we can really do is be honest and share a part of ourselves and hope that someone else will connect to that and feel less lonely when they're like, hey, you know, they're experiencing body dysmorphia too. Hey, like when they look at themselves in the mirror or through self-portraiture, they see multiples of themselves, or they see different versions of themselves, and it's hard to reconcile that. And that's what we were hoping to create.
I think we can't ignore the fact that, you know, the unpaid actor in the room is literally the room here with this exhibit. And what I mean by that is this exhibit is being held at the Glad Day bookstore, which is, you know, an iconic historical bookstore in the village in Toronto, but most importantly is one of the go-to places that is predominantly always queer. You know, that is a space that has been carved out for our community to see themselves and gather. And, you know, really what I'm saying is, in that space, we have a community. The audience that are most likely to be in there is an audience that has certainly experienced at disproportionate rates body dysmorphia and some of these other themes that you're touching on. How much were you thinking about that audience when you put together this exhibit?
So I only approached businesses that were queer owned. So it was very deliberate. I didn't know which business would say, you know, yes in the end, but Glad Day was very, very open and happy to work with us and have an exhibit up. We're not from Toronto, so I didn't really know, you know, much of the history of Glad Day. But once I started looking into them, I really love that they are constantly hosting events. People obviously adore going there and they love using the space, which actually we kind of accounted for in this exhibition. We're having everything printed on a wallpaper material so that, you know, whoever's dancing can still push up against the wall, brush up against the wall. They're not being poked in the back by anything. So they can